Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to the Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Ooh-wah, the Front Lines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Hey, troops, if you like coffee, and who doesn't, you might want to try Freedom One Coffee. It's run by an active duty couple who love our nation and coffee. Everything, even their packaging, is amazing. Check freedom1coffee.com. Here's what we have for you this hour. We'll start by talking with General Chris Petty about military history. Then we'll discuss an Armed Forces Thanksgiving event with Peter Rupert. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show retired Army Brigadier General Chris Petty. Chris is involved in a lot of things, but military history is one of his hot buttons, and mine. Knowing military history is important for all military folks, but for all Americans too. So welcome back to the show, Chris.
Denny, I really appreciate being back. It's a pleasure.
Chris, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army. Why'd you join and what'd you do?
Okay, I'll give you the real quick thumbnail. It is, I joined the Army out of high school. I went to West Point, graduated in 1987. Active duty, flight school, Fort Irwin, California, where every day is war except Christmas. Good assignment for a young lieutenant. And then I got out of the active duty Army, believe it or not, because the Cold War was over. The future looked really boring, and this was before Desert Storm. And I joined the reserves and started a business. So I got a lot of that interesting experience, and then I missed it. And so lo and behold, after getting my feet under me for a year, I joined the National Guard in Colorado and did all the nice traditional ladder assignments for an officer, company commander, Battalion S3. And by the time I got to be a battalion commander, there was a war broke out, and that was Iraq. And so I got to take a battalion into Iraq during the surge. And they did an incredible job over there, actually, which was part of the reason I really kept going in my career. So I, after that, I did brigade command, and then lo and behold, I got lucky again, and I got picked up to be a general and sent to Bosnia to command the NATO headquarters in Bosnia there to do defense reform, peacekeeping stuff. And after that, I went to the Pentagon and learned about the Army staff and the G3 and how operations runs at that level. And then I went to a combatant command in NORTHCOM in Colorado. And from there, I retired. And here I am in Colorado living a good life.
Hey, I understand that. And I have great respect for Colorado. I was stationed at Fort Carson. That's where I met the lady I've been married to for 55 years. So take good care of my hunting state.
Yes, I will.
Okay, let's talk about military history. Chris, why is it, in your opinion, so important that all citizens, especially military, but all citizens, understand our nation's military history?
Well, as you know, Denny, history is part of that common cultural heritage that binds a nation. And, you know, I didn't realize this when I was younger. Most people don't care as much about history when they're young, high school, college. But as you get older, at least my experience was I understood not only the valuable lessons of history and how it really does rhyme. You know, that's the old expression. It doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes quite well. And how important that is in understanding history and conflicts and warfare and those things that we will see again and again in our lifetimes and our children's lifetimes. So it's such a strong thread to understand the human condition. But I think it's important from the perspective of being an American. This is our common story. This is what binds us, is this cultural tie.
You know, I agree with that totally. One of the things our nation is doing right now is sort of falling apart because we aren't proud of who we are and where we came from and how we've learned from lessons in the past and coming back together again and being proud of what happened. Because, yes, a lot of dumb things happened, but an awful lot of great things happened too. And,
right.
And just plain old normal Americans did them.
Right. And it's such a great story. I mean, yes, of course, and especially these days, we have to do those little qualifiers, don't we? You know, we did some bad stuff. We weren't perfect. Well, You know what, Denny, as you know better than anybody else, you know, you show me a nation in the world that has a better track record on the human condition and improving the human condition and helping the world than the United States of America. There isn't one. There's never been one. So we don't even need those caveats, really. We have a great story to tell in these United States of America, you know, and these battles, these critical battles from, you know, Lexington and Concord up to present day. I mean, I've only really kind of studied up to Desert Storm, but these battles really tell this great American story.
Well, they do. And unlike most countries in the world, our nation is not tribal. We were all just people, most of them from Europe, and we wanted our freedom, and we voted for it, and we fought for it, and we got it. And that's, well, the founding of the United States with our Constitution and becoming a constitutional republic, that was unique in the history of the world.
It was. You brought up a really, really important point there, and that is the organizing principle of America was ideals and principles. First time it had ever happened in the history of mankind. It wasn't an organizing principle of a nation state based on an ethnicity, you know, or a family. It was the first time ever. I mean, that alone is amazing.
Yeah, it certainly is. And we're honored to be part of it. And more importantly, we need to keep it going forward. We're the role model for the rest of the world. And when that doesn't happen, Plan B basically is a tyranny.
Right. And when our citizens really doubt themselves and this great experiment called America, it does set us up for other problems. So understanding history is really important to understanding the story and having actually confidence in where we came from and where we're going.
Yes, sir. This is just amazing. And there's so much history. I mean, we could start all the way back with Columbus coming into discovering here. We can just wait till the founding of our country. We can look at the Civil War. I mean, there's so much to look at.
Right.
How do you pick where to start, Chris?
Well, I personally, and of course, everyone has their own favorites and flavors, but I, especially as a retired military officer, I really tend to focus on the historical battles that were beginnings and ends and turning points of wars, because I think we get more of those, of the lessons on the enduring ideas of war. I mean, you can look at campaigns and battles and fully understand the historical context of the day, what was happening, these tensions, these ideas in tension and opposing sides. And then every battle or campaign creates an operational framework between two different commanders and how they're designing or using assumptions and dealing with conditions and things like that. And then, you know, I prefer, you know, then walking through the tactical action of a battle to see great leaders rising to the occasion or failing, depending on which side you're on. And then the results are clear. You know, it's victory or defeat, which is a, you know, a nice black and white aspect of war where, you know, results really matter. And so that's kind of my take on things is key battles, historical battles, turning point battles of American history. And that's kind of the lens I use.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I'm aboard. And there's more to discuss about military history, and Chris is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Chris and I will be right back.
From ending our nation's endless wars, to making sure veterans get the care they deserve, to addressing our country's out-of-control spending problem, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing our nation. You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere Visit cv4a.org to learn more, see how you can get involved, and join our movement. That's cv4a.org.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today. We're continuing our conversation with retired General Chris Petty about our nation's military history. Chris, let's go to a couple of key battles that affected our history that we can learn from. Pick one for us.
Okay. I mean, I love a whole bunch of them, but let's talk about Yorktown. People, and you know, we could pick Lexington, Concord, Bunker Hill, but I like Yorktown. I know we don't have all day. So one of the reasons I like Yorktown is everyone has heard of the Battle of Yorktown, clearly, but most people don't understand what a fascinating story and how much hinged on Washington's moves at, you know, prior to Yorktown and the support of the French Navy, quite frankly, that kind of sealed the deal and put Cornwallis, who was the British commander, put Cornwallis in this checkmate position where he was basically, you know, it was a foregone conclusion that the battle was lost. And that was the critical endpoint of the American Revolution. Now, the revolution didn't effectively end for a couple more years because of just British Parliament and things like that. But this was the final big decisive battle, the culmination of the war. So here you have the war is kind of, you know, going into its fifth, sixth year. Things aren't necessarily going great. The French have come in on the American side, and yet they haven't really done anything yet. You know, they're staged up in Connecticut. And Washington meets with the French commander, General Rochambeau, and they're starting to create a spring campaign plan. And one of the interesting things about Yorktown that almost nobody really in the general public knows is Washington wanted to attack General Clinton in his, General Clinton was the overall commander of the American theater for the Brits. And he was in basically a position in New York. And General Washington wanted to attack him in New York. That's where his troops were. That's kind of where the center of gravity was at the time. And the French commander, Rochambeau, with the cooperation of the French Navy, really kind of tricked Washington and forced Washington's hand to attack further south around, you know, the Yorktown Peninsula and the Chesapeake, because the British were weaker in that region. And the French thought that they could create a little more dominant position, a little more surprise down south. And this was a ruse played by the French commander and the French Navy that, well, they couldn't get their ships up north. It just wasn't going to work out. But it was a very professional and polite nudging of Washington. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't really underhanded, but some of the correspondence shows the success of their posturing to get Washington to go south. So that's one of the big stories. And then, you know, to keep it simple, so Washington and Rochambeau moved the army down south, and along the way, they actually used this great deception to keep Clinton focused in New York, thinking Washington's coming after him in New York. They use a very elaborate deception plan, including gathering small boats around New York area and clearly creating the message to General Clinton that Washington's army is going to invade and attack around New York as they slip by to the south. So that's the second cool part of the story that people don't really understand. And then as they get south, things are playing out in the Atlantic Ocean and in the Chesapeake Bay, where the French Navy's coming up from the Bahamas, and they're coming up to support. The British Navy is now sailing south, trying to intercept them. And the moves on the water to create this deception are pretty astounding stories in themselves, in that, you know, the French Navy give the Brits the slip out of the Bahamas. So they don't really know where they're going. So as they go out and chase them, it's too late. They're already moving north and they're already getting to the Chesapeake. So the fact that the French got to the Chesapeake first is a key element of the story. You know, this cat and mouse game is happening on land and it's happening at sea, and everything comes together at the right moment. And when the Brits come in with the Navy, because they finally come down and the French are already occupying the Chesapeake, it's too late. And the French Navy comes out to fight. It's called the Battle of the Capes. It's the key setup for the siege of Yorktown. And the French Navy essentially slugs it out with the Brits. They get in a better position, essentially, with the wind. And the Brits have to retire north to repair their ships. So the French own the Potomac. And now Cornwallis is trapped because you got Washington and Rochambeau coming on the land, coming down the peninsula. And you got the French Navy now in control of the Chesapeake Bay. And they've already repelled the British fleet. So now it's just a matter of time. And Washington goes into siege warfare. And lo and behold, on October 19th, 1781, it's all lost. And America wins and the Brits lose. And the French really, really helped us out a great deal. This is the fascinating stories of these battles of American history. And they're just, I just find them fascinating.
Chris, I thought I had studied that battle. I didn't know about the French deception and the role. This is cool. I'm not a careful one. Old dogs, new tricks. I'm going to learn new stuff. This is cool. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty about military history. We got a couple of minutes left. You got another battle you want to talk about briefly?
Well, it's funny. I've got a ton of battles. I'll throw out Gettysburg because everybody knows Gettysburg. So let's talk about Gettysburg real quick. So Gettysburg is, it's been referred to as the high water mark of the Confederacy at July 1st through the 3rd, 1863. General Lee, who has now earned a reputation as being a very good tactical general, is fighting against General Meade, the newly appointed commander of the Army of the Potomac. General Meade has more troops, but General Lee is on the offense. He's invaded for the second time. And here they are set up to fight on the fields of Gettysburg, just south of town. Now, the reason I think this is a fascinating story, I won't get into detail of Gettysburg, and probably a lot of your audience knows this battle, but I think the fascinating story about Gettysburg is, how did General Meade, this kind of unknown rising general in the Union Army, how did he manage to beat the very competent General Lee on the fields of Gettysburg over those 3 days? And there's a lot to that story. And, people have seen the movies, read the books, Killer Angels, all that great stuff. And it comes down to a few things. One is General Meade really used, what we call economy of force. I know you know that term. He was on the defense, fortunately, because of great actions by his subordinate commanders on day one. They kind of got him the high ground, if you will, south of town. And from then on, he really used his forces, plugging gaps, moving forces at the right time based on the pressure that Lee was applying to different parts of his line. That's one aspect of the story. Another aspect of the story is, frankly, Lee's failure here in what we call in the military mission command. And basically, it used to be command and control. How does a leader exercise his vision and control on the field to create his plan? And in this case, Lee actually never met face-to-face with his corps commanders during the entire battle, which kind of blows some people away. They didn't realize that. And so his Lee's synchronization was actually pretty terrible. And it let General Meade plug the holes, move the forces to the front where they were needed. And so those are just a couple of big ideas in the cool story that is Gettysburg in July of 1863.
Well, I wish we had time to push that one further, but we don't.
Yeah. But Chris, we can talk about 100 battles.
Yeah. One of the things that you have done is you're publishing something called Battle Digest, which is a great military history document, I guess is a way to put it, vehicle. Talk to us about that and how people get a copy of it or if they want to use it.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing it up. So Battle Digest is my retirement baby. It's my passion now because I like military history. I want people to understand it better. And I wanted to create an easier way to really grasp this stuff. And so Battle Digest it's like a mini booklet. It's like a little pamphlet. You can picture a trifold brochure that folds out, beautiful, multicolor, glossy pages. But it's really simple, 8.5 by 11. And the design was basically in 20 or 30 minutes, you're going to understand all of the key aspects of the battle, all the storyline stuff that I was just talking about. It's got a consistent format. So you can actually see the different threads and continuities throughout periods of history in these different areas that we touched on earlier. Like, what is the strategic context? You know, what were the assumptions being made? What were these commanders thinking as they created this framework for operations? And then how did they have to react on the ground when things changed? And then the last part, the little fold-out page at the back, is lessons learned. So we talk about strategy and operational art and leadership and all these great things. So it's a wonderful piece. It's a historical series. You can order them one by one, pick a great battle because you want to learn more. You can order a subscription and I mail you one each quarter. It is a great and easy way to learn military history and what I called earlier, you know, just our common American heritage.
Yes, sir. I think, and obviously you do too, that we Americans need to know this so we can be better Americans.
Right.
So
that's right. And I've got mothers collecting them for their sons. I've got grandfathers collecting them and putting them in a binder for their grandchildren. So it's that kind of resource. And all I have to do is go to my website, battledigest.com. Just very simple. Battledigest, one word, .com. And there's options there. You'll learn more about it. You can dip your toe in the water, whatever you want to do. It's pretty simple. So I hope your listeners will take a look.
Yes, let me strongly encourage everyone to do that. Chris, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform. And thank you for what you're doing now. I'm glad we're friends. God bless you.
Thanks, Denny. It was a great pleasure. Appreciate it.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Peter Rupert about the Armed Forces Thanksgiving event. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Do 26 with each arm twice. Then take a break and stay in the area. Have a cup of Freedom coffee. I'll be right back. Day 3 Creation is a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products. Our Get Relief, Give Relief program sees that 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing service dogs at no cost to disabled veterans to help restore their physical and emotional independence. Giving is an expression of our thankfulness and praise to God as we recognize that everything we have belongs to the Lord. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Peter Rupert. Peter runs the Fusion Education Group, and he chairs and is one of the founders of the Armed Forces Thanksgiving event held every May in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So welcome back to the show, Peter.
Thank you so much, Danny. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
Peter, the impact of the Armed Forces Thanksgiving event has been so positive in West Michigan that I hope other communities are picking it up. And in fact, I know one or two at least are looking at it and do something similar. Talk to us about how and why this idea began.
Sure. As you know, Denny, this will be the seventh year we've had the event. Two of those have been happening during COVID when we had to do it virtually, but the seventh total year. And this year we're back in a live venue, which is really exciting. And I think that's where the real magic of the event comes from. But the original genesis for this was about 8 or 9 years ago. I was just thinking about how we didn't seem to celebrate our veterans here in Grand Rapids very much. We certainly had a Veterans Day event downtown. I think it was an evening, if you want to call it a parade. I'd call it more of a walk. Most of the town had cleared out by then and very few people were around. And it just seemed like, given all that was going on in the world and the sacrifices that our veterans were currently making or had recently made in more recent conflicts, but also looking way back, wouldn't it be great if we could develop an event that would really accomplish three goals? One was, how do we do a better job in the West Michigan community of celebrating our veterans and thanking them through an event like this where they could attend and feel really positive and know that the community is behind them and supporting them in any way we can? And then secondly, It was a real goal of ours to create an educational event that high schoolers would be exposed to. And so they could sit down with veterans, they could hear military speakers talk about the sacrifices and the commitment and all the powerful things that the military does for young people. And they'd have a chance to really understand what it is it's going on across the world. And at that time, I had kids who were in high school, and it was just weird how their lives continued day to day. But yet some young man or woman 2 or 3 years older than them was across the world in Iraq or Afghanistan. And, you know, my kids and my kids' generation weren't even hardly, they were aware of it, but they certainly didn't know much about it. So we thought, what a great way to put an educational event together. And then finally, we wanted to create an event where we could raise money to support veteran military causes here in the area. And we partnered with the West Michigan Veterans Coalition. And almost all of our funding goes to them, and we rely on them to determine the best way to use it, whether it's for helping with housing or helping with vets who might have PTSD and need to go to some kind of retreat center, or if it's for scholarships who folks want to get a degree of one type or another. So we really rely on them to determine the best way to use our funds.
So the concept to do it in May, which is the military month, more or less, and indeed, since the third Saturday in May is Armed Forces Day, we tended to try to have it the Friday before that event, that day. And what I really appreciated about it is, as a military guy, this was not a recruiting event. Indeed, military recruiters weren't welcome, but they weren't invited. They couldn't have a table or anything. This was not trying to recruit students. It was trying to inform them about the military. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And that's one of the reasons I think it's been so well received. Now, so we certainly have high school students who attend and really love the story and may even eventually enlist in some form or fashion. But that's certainly not the goal. The goal is to make sure that students of all types in high school are aware of the sacrifices and the commitments that the active and veteran militaries are making or have made, and expose to them all the great things that the military does to protect our freedoms and the liberties. And, you know, it's without our military, all the things we take for granted would certainly not be around.
Indeed. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Peter Rupert about Armed Forces Thanksgiving in May. What I, again, enjoy is that there are tables of 10 and there's 40 or 50 of them. And there's usually 3 or 4 students and 2 veterans and then some business people at every table. And while there's a speaker who's usually really good, a lot of the essence is of these students talking with veterans at the table while they're eating lunch. I thought that idea was totally cool.
Yeah, that was a unique innovation that one of our committee members came up with early on, that, gosh, wouldn't it be great if at those tables, high school kids could be asking veterans about what their experience was. And like you said, there's 2 military veterans at least. Oftentimes, the business sponsors who purchase the table as part of the fundraiser, there's 3 or 4 folks from the business, and many times there's 2 or 3 folks who have had military service. So in essence, you get 3 or 4 folks with military experience talking to young high school kids, and really makes for some great dialogue, along with all the other pomp and circumstance, and like you mentioned, the keynote speakers, et cetera.
And I love the Thanksgiving thing. We have a Thanksgiving meal, turkey and cranberry sauce and all that good stuff, in May, because we are thankful for our military. That's a brilliant spot, and it's a good conversation point, too.
Yeah, that's really gone over well. And again, we didn't want to compete with Veterans Day, right? I mean, that wasn't our goal. We thought, gosh, 6 months later, during Armed Forces Month, it'd be a great time to, as the spring springs here in Michigan, and what a great time during Armed Forces Month to find a way to thank our military. And so that Armed Forces Thanksgiving idea with the traditional Thanksgiving meal just kind of drives home that point, that anyone who's at that table is suddenly reminded that this is a Thanksgiving for all that the military folks have done for us.
And you've always had really good speakers. Is that difficult to get good speakers?
You know, we found that, you know, it takes a little bit of work, but I think the reality is when we get out in front of it, and now that we've been doing this for 7 years, it's The speakers really get excited when we tell them the story and they hear the story about the high schools and they know they're helping to raise money for veterans. So it really works out well. And so we've got a few people in our committee, Bob Hughes especially, who's focused on that. And that's kind of what their main job is to find and qualify great speakers who can come in and send a great message to our community and to our high schoolers.
You know, that is a good technique on a committee. Find somebody who wants to do something and let them.
Exactly.
Because that's a win-win situation. Peter, I'm hoping there are listeners who would like to at least look into doing this for their community. How could they contact you and what kind of advice would you give them?
Sure. Well, there's a couple ways they can contact us. Our website is www.armedforcesthx.org. armedforcesthx.org, and easy way to contact us on the website. And I think the most exciting thing is we put together a committee made up of a few business folks, a few veterans, and some educators, principals in local high schools. It started with maybe 7 or 8 of us, and now it's up to about 12 folks, as you know, Denny. And it's really been great. And once you get through the first one, it's really powerful. And we hired a executive director who runs this for us on a part-time basis, obviously, but she's an event promotions person and she does a great job on all of this logistics. So where there's a will, there's a way. And we're happy to help anybody who wants to get something like this started in their community. It's just so important that all of us are thinking about our veterans and our community. And so often they come back and they kind of get lost in the shuffle and we forget about them. And this is a great way for us to, we've raised almost $300,000. It'd be north of $300,000 after this year to support veterans causes and help folks who have come back and needed that extra leg up. And we're just proud to know that this event is ongoing and we're doing our best. So if anyone's interested, please contact us and we're happy to help in any way we can.
And if you can't figure out how to reach him, Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. I know how to get him. Peter, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your wonderful efforts in promoting and appreciating our military and our nation. Thank you for Armed Forces Thanksgiving. I'm proud to be on your team.
Thank you so much, Denny. Always a pleasure.
But troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at ptsdlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. About 60 this time. I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net, never forget, never forgotten.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from your listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Susan, a Navy vet, prayed for Frontlines of Freedom and for you as well as for our country on the National Day of Prayer.
Thank you, Sue. The National Day of Prayer is the Thursday before Mother's Day. I too prayed for our nation then and every day, and I hope everyone does.
Mike, a Navy dad, really enjoyed your 750th show. The add-ons were really funny. And your 15th birthday is next month. Shouldn't you have had closer to 780 shows?
Well, Mike, due to business and health issues, we had no shows for 4 months during our second year. And we missed a few weeks when we were bumped for sporting events. I'm glad you enjoyed show 750 last week. It was fun. And now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What you got first?
Well, on 20 May 1801, four U.S. warships were sent to Mediterranean to protect American commerce from Barbary pirates. And 14 years later, on 20 May 1815, Commodore Stephen Decatur on the frigate Guerre sailed with 10 ships to suppress Mediterranean pirates' raids on U.S. shipping.
Weren't there Marines involved in some of that stuff, Skip?
You bet there were, Colonel. I'm so glad that you remembered that.
Hey, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, you beat that into me.
It's hard to get away from that, isn't it?
It is. And on 18 May 1863, Union General Ulysses S. Grant surrounded Vicksburg, the last Confederate stronghold on the Mississippi River, in one of the most brilliant campaigns of the war. Beginning in the winter of 1862-63, Grant made several attempts to capture Vicksburg. In March, he marched his army down the west bank of the Mississippi, while Union Admiral David Porter's flotilla ran past the substantial batteries that protected the city. They met south of the city, and Grant crossed the river and entered Mississippi. He then moved to approach Vicksburg from its more lightly defended eastern side. In May, he had to split his army to deal with a threat from Joseph Johnson's rebels in Jackson, the state capital, that lay 40 miles east of Vicksburg. After defeating Johnson's forces, Grant moved towards Vicksburg. On May 16th, Grant fought the Confederates under John Pemberton at Champion Hill and defeated them decisively. He then attacked the next day, and Pemberton fled into Vicksburg, with Grant following close behind. The trap was now complete, and Pemberton was stuck in Vicksburg, where he held out until the 4th of July. In the 3 weeks since Grant's men marched 180 miles and won five battles, they took nearly 100 Confederate artillery pieces and nearly 6,000 prisoners, all with relatively light losses.
And on 19 May 1864, during the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln wrote to anti-slavery congressional leader Senator Charles Sumner of Massachusetts, proposing that widows and children of soldiers should be given equal treatment regardless of race. Lincoln shared many of his friend Sumner's views on civil rights. In an unprecedented move, Lincoln allowed a black woman, the widow of a black Civil War soldier, Major Lionel Booth, to meet with him at the White House. Mary Booth's husband had been killed at Fort Pillow, Tennessee, in April 1864. The massacre of African-American Union forces that followed the subsequent fall of the fort was one of the most brutal of the Civil War. After speaking with Mrs. Booth privately, Lincoln sat down and wrote a letter of introduction for her to carry to Sumner and asked him to hear what she had to say about the hardships imposed on families of black soldiers killed or maimed in battle. As a result of his meeting with Mrs. Booth, Senator Sumner influenced congressional members in 1866 to introduce a resolution to provide for the equal treatment of the dependents of black soldiers. According to the Library of Congress, though, there are no records that Mrs. Booth ever applied for or received the widow's pension after the bill's passage.
And on 20 May 1942, during World War II, our Navy first permitted black recruits to serve.
And on May 20, 1945, during World War II, on Okinawa, our troops secured Chocolate Drop Hill after fighting in the interconnecting tunnels. Elements of the 1st Marine Division captured Wanna Ridge. Elements of the U.S. 6th Marine Division began mopping up operations in the Japanese-held caves on the Horseshoe and Half Moon positions. They used flamethrowers and hollow-charged weapons and sealed off some Japanese troops. Japanese forces counterattacked on the Horseshoe position, suffering an estimated 200 killed. To the east, our 7th and 96th Army Divisions continued to be engaged in the capture of Yonah-Barrow.
And on 20 May 1951, Air Force Captain James Jabara, the 4th Fighter Interceptor Wing, became the first Korean War ace and the first jet ace in aviation history. After downing his 5th MiG, he accomplished this feat in an F-86 Sabre with one hung drop tank.
And on May 20, 1969, after 10 days and 10 bloody assaults, Hill 937 in South Vietnam was finally captured by United States and South Vietnamese troops. The Americans who fought there cynically dubbed Hill 937 Hamburger Hill because the battle and its high casualty rate reminded them of a meat grinder. Located 1 mile east of the Laotian border, Hill 937 was ordered taken as part of Operation Apache Snow, a mission intended to limit enemy infiltration from Laos that threatened Hue to the northeast and Da Nang to the southeast. On May 10th, Following air and artillery strikes, a U.S.-led infantry force launched its first assault on the North Vietnamese stronghold, but suffered a high proportion of casualties and fell back. 10 more infantry assaults came during the next 10 days, but Hill 937's North Vietnamese defenders did not give up their fortified position until May 20th. Almost 100 Americans were killed and more than 400 wounded in taking the hill, amounting to a shocking 70% casualty rate. Our military leaders had ordered Hill 937 taken primarily as a diversionary tactic, and on May 28, it was abandoned. This led to further outrage in America over what seemed a senseless loss of American lives. North Vietnamese forces eventually returned and refortified their original position.
And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a Seattle man was hospitalized and later arrested after accidentally shooting himself in the head as he tried to leave the scene following a home invasion. Police received word from a Seattle homeowner who said he'd heard noises coming from his garage early Wednesday morning. The victim went to his garage and found a masked suspect who ran after being spotted. The victim grabbed a broom and chased the man to his van in a nearby parking lot. When the suspect got to his vehicle, he raised a gun and warned the victim to get back. Seattle police reports that the victim turned away from the suspect and later heard gunshots as the suspect's vehicle sped away. The suspect is recovering from the gunshot wound. He currently faces a number of charges, including burglary, felony harassment, possession of a stolen vehicle, and unlawful possession of a firearm.
Thanks, Colonel. When I first read this, I laughed, but then quickly reminded myself that I should feel sad when a man shoots himself in the head, even if he is a criminal. There are two things we need to talk about with this scenario. First, let's talk about two very important gun safety rules. The number one rule in gun safety is to always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Here's a clue, folks. Pointing the gun at your head is not a safe direction. But then again, the criminal was being chased by an angry homeowner with a broom. So we'll cut him some slack on that one. The bottom line is this. Even if you accidentally press the trigger, no one will get hurt if the gun is pointed in a safe direction. The second rule our criminal violated was this. Always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot. This is the rule I see violated most often on the gun range. People just automatically place their finger on the trigger every time they pick up a pistol. And if you do that enough, it's only a matter of time before you press the trigger when you don't want to. I shouldn't have to say this, but when the gun is pointed at your head, you should not press the trigger. Use a training gun to practice drawing from your holster over and over and over again in a safe manner. I do this thousands of times every year just to keep my muscle memory intact. And now let's talk about the homeowner. In general, it's not a good idea for a civilian to chase a fleeing felon, especially if he has a gun and you have only a broom. There are much safer ways to clean up the crime in your neighborhood. Few of us have the professional skills necessary to tackle an armed criminal, take away his gun, and hold him until police arrive. In a case like this, your job is to survive the altercation and be a good witness for the police. Take down a description of the criminal along with a car and license plate number. Take a picture or video of the fleeing felon if you can safely do so. Then the police can track him down and take him into custody. Thankfully, the homeowner wasn't shot and the bad guy was punished twice. Once when he shot himself in the head and the second time when he went to jail.
Somehow, that just sounds strange.
It's called poetic justice.
Well said, brother. Well said. Our movie of the month is Our Kind of Love. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at Danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, military veteran and attorney Davis Younts will discuss freedom of religion in our military. It is under attack. Then American Legion National Commander Paul Dillard will join us, and we'll discuss Corsairs with co-host and pilot Roland Ashby. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.